ಪುನಂ ಸಹನಾ ಭವತು ಸಹನಾ ಭುನಂತು ಸಹ ವೀರ್ಯಂ ಕರವಾವಹೈ ತೇಜಸ್ವಿನಾವಧೀತಮಸ್ತು ಮಾ ವಿದ್ವಿಷಾವಹೈ. ಓಂ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ ಶಾಂತಿ.
Okay, verse 24. It's a darshan.
Diye prakasham paramo vitirya. Diye prakasham paramo vitirya. Swayam diyontav pravipati guptaha. Swayam diyontav pravipati guptaha. Diyam paravarcha diyontaretra. ಧಿಯಂ ಪರಾವರ್ಜ ಧಿಯೋಂತರೇತ್ರ ಸಂಯೋಜನೇಶ್ವರ ದೃಷ್ಟಿರಣ್ಯ ಸಂಯೋಜನಾನೇಶ್ವರ ದೃಷ್ಟಿರಣ್ಯ. ಧಿಯೇ ಪ್ರಕಾಶಂ ಪರಮಃ ವಿಚಿರ್ಯ ಸ್ವಯಂ ಧಿಯಃ ಅಂತಃ ಪ್ರವಿಭಾತಿ ಗುಪ್ತಃ. ಧಿಯಂ ಪರಾವರ್ಜ ಧಿಯಃ ಅಂತರೇ ಅತ್ರ ಸಂಯೋಜನಾತ್ ನ ಈಶ್ವರ ದೃಷ್ಟಿ ಈಶ್ವರ ದೃಷ್ಟಿ ಅನ್ಯಾ.
Okay,
so this whole verse is really from Ramana, from the way that Ramana teaches. It's how does one have the vision of Ishvara? That's what he's talking about. So here he says, "Diye prakasham." Diye means the buddhi, the prakasha, the light for the buddhi. Diye is in the dative case for the buddhi, right? So the prakasha, the light of the buddhi. Paramaha here is Ishvara. Means it's Ishvara, and for Ramana, Ishvara is Brahman. So the Brahman, the self which is infinite, Vitirya, having given Dattva, having given the prakasha to the buddhi. The root da, to give, governs the dative case. So you would give something to something, right? So I give a gift to you. So that to you is put in the dative case. And so here it says, the Paramaha, the Supreme, means Brahman, Rizishwara, having given prakasha, light, consciousness, to the buddhi, Swayam itself, Diyaha Antaha Pravibhati Buddha, then having given the lit up the buddhi with consciousness, then itself shines inside Antaha Diyaha, inside of the buddhi, right? Then itself shining inside of the buddhi, it shines hidden there, right? It remains as conscious being, you know, inside of the buddhi, which it's lighting up, itself remaining hidden. So itself remaining hidden, itself shines inside of the buddhi. So I'll explain that, but that's what the Sanskrit says. So then, that being the case, means Brahman is the conscious being that is illumining, is the consciousness which the buddhi enjoys, and lighting up the buddhi, it remains there, shining, itself shining, but hidden. Right? It remains there, itself shining, but hidden. Hidden because you don't know, all you know is that the buddhi, right, enjoys consciousness, but you don't know that the consciousness which the buddhi enjoys is Brahman. Right, is yourself, which is the self of Ishvara, that isn't known. And so the nature of the self, which is Paramaha, which is Brahman, remains hidden. Right? The buddhi is totally enjoying that self, but that self, what it is, remains hidden. Okay, so we'll get into that in a minute. Then he says, okay, that being the case, and the case for every jiva, you know, the human beings are the ones that care about it, but it's true for the animals or for any conscious being, the consciousness that lights up that conscious being, right, whether it be an animal or a human being or an insect, it doesn't make any difference, the consciousness that lights that up, lights up that sukshma sharira, lights up that subtle body which is taking a physical body, that conscious being is Brahman, right? And so even though the conscious being is not hidden from anybody, your conscious being is not hidden from anybody. It's not hidden from an animal. It's not hidden from an insect. It is me. You know, that little insect is, I am an insect. If it could talk, it would say, I am, you know, I am a butterfly, or I am a worm, or I am Tibby, or I am whatever. That I am is self-evident, self-effulgent, and it is your own, and it is the self that you are right now, no matter what you are as a conscious being, identified with. That self is self-evident. It's aparoksha. I am that. The problem is that, and so that is self-evident and claimed and known by everybody, but that this self-evident self, me the conscious being, is other than the upadhi, which is enjoying it, like this physical body, mind, sense organs, that this self that I am is really the self of the whole creation, is infinite and is changeless. That is totally hidden. Right? Because the buddhi, now going back to just humans, the buddhi has no cognition of that at all. All the buddhi knows is whatever it is, whatever vritti is there, whatever experience is there, that is enjoying me, the conscious being. So what happens is, and then the buddhi is me. The buddhi says, I am me. Right? So like if I say right now I'm talking, I am me. I am this conscious being who is sitting right here who is thinking this. But the one who is talking, the mind and the sense organs and the vak, the speech, and the physical body which is enjoying this consciousness is the one who is claiming it to belong to itself. So if I say to you, I'm a conscious being, I'm saying this body, mind, sense organs complex is a conscious being. And therefore, when this body, mind, sense organs dies, I, the conscious being, will also die. That's what we mean by anyonya adyasa, this superimposition. It's mutual. You know, where consciousness takes on the body, mind, sense organs, and the body, mind, sense organs becomes conscious. It becomes one entity. Even though that is a fact, that's the fact of everybody's experience, you know, still, even though that anyonya adyasa, that mutual superimposition is there, the conscious being which you identify with as yourself, that is Brahman. It's not that there's another experience or another conscious being. You are Brahman, the very conscious being that you have superimposed on the body. That conscious being is Brahman. Right? But that it is Brahman is Guptaha, is hidden. I'm not hidden as a conscious being, but that I am Brahman, that is hidden, completely hidden. Right? Because it's hidden by my identification of my being with this body, which is not infinite. The sense organs, the mind, are not infinite. They're all subject to change. They're subject to death. You know? So, that is the big problem. So, what he says here is this Paramaha, that one, the conscious being, which is infinite, which is Brahman, having given its consciousness to the buddhi, in the sense, the very consciousness that the buddhi enjoys, so having given that consciousness to the buddhi, it remains there shining, but hidden, shining inside of the buddhi, right? But itself hidden. It itself is the one that's shining in the buddhi, but it is hidden. Because its nature is unknown. Its nature is totally mixed with the nature of the thing which is being illumined, which is the buddhi, and from the buddhi to the sense organs, from the sense organs to the body, from the body to the creation. Okay, so then it says, what has to happen here for knowledge to take place? He goes, the buddhi, he says, paravartya, he says, having turned the buddhi around, having turned the buddhi around, diyaha antare atra, he says, and let me just check something here on the bhasha. Okay. Having turned that buddhi around, which is diyaha antare, which is inside of the buddhi, you know, having turned that around, then he says, having turned that buddhi around to that, pointing to that which is inside of the buddhi, samyojanat, by uniting with that, that alone is Ishwara Drishti, not anything else. There is no, he says, Ishwara Drishti, the vision, the understanding of Ishwara, is not different from that turning the buddhi around and uniting it with the conscious being that is there. That's in the Sanskrit. Let me explain it in the English. In English. In the whole teaching methodology, one of the key elements when you're teaching this, teaching this knowledge, is this Drik Drisha Viveka. Drik Drisha Viveka means the differentiating, the viveka, the discrimination between the subject and the object. And the reason that's so important is because the subject is always different from the object. There's always a space between the subject and the object, right? To the point that just in Vyavahara, just in my normal experience, if I'm looking at something, if I'm objectifying something, then I am not that thing which I'm objectifying. What that means is that the thing that I'm objectifying can change or can come and go. It does nothing to the witness, the one that is the subject, illumining it. Okay? And so now, what happens with this anyonya adyasa, this mutual superimposition that is everybody's state? This is a beginningless ignorance that comes along with the creation. In other words, you don't have as a jiva, you don't have a prior condition to anyonya adyasa. Because as a jiva, we say that the life of the jiva is beginningless. For one thing, we say the creation is beginningless, the jiva is beginningless. Birth, infinite number of jivas, birth after birth after birth after birth. Where is the prior condition for a jiva? Because as long as there is an upadhi there, as long as there's a mind, body, sense organs, that mind will always be kind of like the clay pot. But from the standpoint of the mind, it will always be an awareful being. The sukshma sharira, the subtle body which is transmigrating, will always be, as long as it is there, something which is enjoying awareness. Because sattva, the sattva, rajas, and tamas, sattva reflects awareness. So wherever it is, awareness is, from its own standpoint. Right? And so it has the anyonya adyasa, the mind itself has the anyonya adyasa of saying, I am the awareful being, and the awareful being is me. That's anyonya adyasa. I am the awareful being is me. And what's to make it think differently? Because the problem is that wherever the sattva is, that the subtle body, that which is subtle and reflects consciousness is. And so why should it think, well, I'm not really a conscious being? Because it's never without consciousness. So the thing that has to be recognized, though, so when we say that you know, I'm the conscious being and the conscious being is me, we have to analyze that situation and show that between me, the conscious being, and everything that makes up the mind and the sense organs in the body, there is a Drik Drisha relationship. In other words, every thought modification that I have, every perception that I have, every emotion that I have, even the ahankara, the I notion, all of these things are drishas. All of them are objectified. All of those experiences, without exception, come into consciousness and go out of consciousness. Like a thought. It comes and it goes. It comes and it goes. Emotions are like that. Perceptions are like that. Any vritti is like that. So there's something that is continually remaining and something that is continually changing. But my experience is that even though these things are coming and going in consciousness, from my experience, even from the standpoint of the buddhi, I am always there. You know? And so, of course, I am the conscious being. That's the buddhi talking. But it's not recognizing that everything about it is continually coming and going and subject to change, whereas the conscious being isn't. Okay, so that viveka has to be pointed out. Mm-hmm. Now, if that viveka is pointed out, look at what has to happen there. Normally, we identify with the consciousness which the vritti is enjoying without separating it from the vritti. And so then what happens is, I, the conscious being, am seeing that painting. I see that painting. But what's actually happening there is the conscious being with the mind using the sense organs is forming a vritti of the painting, which reflects consciousness. Reflects the painting and it reflects consciousness. So how am I going to differentiate, you know, myself, the one that illumines the vritti, you know, from the vritti? So what he says here is, first of all, I have to turn the vritti around in the sense that normally the vritti is either self-involved with its own imaginations or feelings, and so it's turning around within itself, or it's using the sense organs to gain knowledge of something out here. And so the vritti, in a sense, is always focused outward, right? I'm talking about focused outward even in terms of being focused inward, in terms of like an emotion or an imagination. It's still not focused toward me. It's focused on something else, right? Either through sense perception or thoughts or whatever is going on in the mind, right? So that's the activity of the vritti. Now what I have to do is I have to make the vritti, instead of being focused on all of these things, to be aware of the one that's illumining it. And so the vritti, instead of being a mirror, in a sense, directed this way, has to turn and be like a mirror directed this way, where it's recognizing now its own content. See what I mean? Now, it's a little, now I wouldn't say exactly tricky, but let me tell you, there's a couple of things involved here in this type of discrimination.
Just questions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no.
Thank you.
There's some things involved here in this kind of a discrimination. One thing is that once you objectify, recognize that everything is objectified, which means this, everything of your sense perception is obviously objectified, but then your physical body is objectified, subject-object, subject still remains, the physical body is objectified by your sense organs, then your sense organs are objectified by your mind, because the mind is aware of the sense organs, and then the mind itself is objectified by you, by the conscious being, the ahankara, your ignorance, your knowledge, your I notion, everything that can possibly take place in a vritti or in samsara is objectified by consciousness. Okay? So we've gone as far, once you do that, you've gone as far as you can in the objectification, because you can't have consciousness objectify consciousness in a subject-object relationship, because what would be between the consciousness and the consciousness for it to objectify itself, you know. So we say, that's why we say when we get to consciousness, it's its own light because it's consciousness. It doesn't need to be objectified because it is consciousness. But now, when you get to that point, what has happened is you have now objectified all of the instruments of knowledge that you have available. Like the sense organs that allow you to see and to hear are objectified. Mm-hmm. They're differentiated from consciousness, right? And the mind itself, which is a thinker, a knower, a feeler, you know, an imaginer, that mind itself is objectified. And so once all of these things are objectified from consciousness, knowership itself is objectified. subject-object relationship is objectified. I can have a subject-object relationship with you because I have a mind and sense organs and I can objectify you. I'm the subject and you're the object, right? But once I've objectified all of these things, then I've actually even objectified the subject-object relationship. Because I no longer, consciousness no longer can be a knower because it doesn't have any means of knowledge to know anything. Like, just like without eyes, I can't be a seer. I can still be walking around as a blind person, you know. But I'm not a seer because I don't have eyes. And if I don't have ears, I'm deaf. I'm not a hearer, you know. And if my mind isn't functioning, I'm not a thinker, you know. And so all of these capacities that exist within duality that belong to the body, mind, sense organs no longer belong to the consciousness, which is the one because of whom all of these things are known. All of these things are lit up. So now consciousness then is differentiated, in fact, from everything. It's even differentiated from space, because I'm aware of space, right? It's differentiated from the ahankara, the I notion, because I'm aware of the I notion. It's just a thought. It's a thought that comes and goes. You don't need it. You don't need it to be you. You don't have to walk around saying I. It's just a thought. It's a vritti. So everything actually that identifies you in terms of a jiva, this person here, actually has been differentiated from the conscious being that is the one left standing ultimately as the subject, as you, right? Just like you can see, you know, like when we do any type of meditation, the one left standing is only your being, consciousness. Everything else is slowly, slowly resolved as your mind becomes more and more quiet and more turned away. So this is where Ramana comes. It's turned away from all of this activity. Right? It's turned away. This is the this word that he uses, paravartya, having turned away the buddhi, right? From anything external. So what is external? External means anything that can be objectified. Subject to object. External means the object. External just doesn't mean external to this body. This body itself is external. The sense organs are external. The mind is external. The ahankara is external. Your knowledge and ignorance is external. Anything that can be objectified external to you. And so when the buddhi is turned away from that, then what is happening is it's kind of like in the clay pot. The clay, the pot, its sole focus becomes only on the clay. You know? And so here your buddhi, its sole focus becomes only on the conscious being, which is truly itself. That's why you are Brahman. The buddhi, the conscious being, which is the buddhi, that is Brahman. But what happens when this differentiation is, this viveka is done, is completed, the buddhi recognizes both I am Brahman and I Brahman am free of the buddhi along with absolutely everything else that can be objectified. Right? Because if it can be objectified and it's coming and going and I remain the same, I have no dependence on it for my being at all. If that's recognized, once that's recognized, and this conscious being that I am is not objectifiable, then what Ramana does in his teaching style, he says, that is the recognition of Ishvara. In that recognition of that self, which is non-objectifiable, that is the recognition of the Padama, of the Padama, of Brahman. And who is Ishvara? Just like who are you? Is only Brahman. You know? And so we say, now, this is something that's important to understand in this. When you get to that ultimately yourself, the subject, that is no longer objectifiable, then there is nothing to limit the subject. because everything that can be objectified is it is free from. Right? Just like if you were to walk out the room, I don't walk out the room because I'm not connected. Right? That's what we mean, like in this teaching methodology, when we say the self is asanga. It's asangaha. It means it's totally unattached. Nothing can be done to it. It's asangaha. Nothing can grab onto it. And so for you, when everything that you had thought, you know, was you, and so say your mind is sad, I am sad. That would be sangha, right? With the condition of the mind is my condition. So whatever the condition of the mind is, that's my condition. And so I'm not free from the mind, I am the mind. I'm attached to the mind. Whatever the mind is doing, that's what I am doing. But what if whatever the mind is doing, I illumine? But nothing happens to me. Everything the body is doing, I illumine, but nothing happens to me. Now say each one of us says that. Everything the mind is doing, right? I am free from, nothing happens to me, nothing happens to me, nothing happens to me. Nothing happens to you because there's no attachment. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about this no attachment in terms of satyam and mitya in a minute. But there's no attachment in the sense that nothing happens to you. Now, the self that can't be objectified can also not be differentiated. Right? Now, so look at this situation. I, the conscious being, have now been differentiated my mind through this teaching methodology step by step by step. You recognize who is ultimately the subject, me, is really free of all of these things I had taken to be me. And you realize that, you realize that, you realize that. So what happens is that everything that differentiates you from me, you have differentiated yourself from. Right? You see what I mean? Like if I say I, the conscious being, illumine this body, and you all say that too. You say, yes, I, the conscious being, illumine this body. Then I'm not this body, neither are you. And so the bodies don't, even though the bodies are different, each body is different from the other body. That doesn't say anything about me and you. And that goes all the way to every single thing that you have differentiated from yourself. My mind is different from your mind, but I illumine my mind and you illumine your mind. So the mind is not me. It's not the nature of the subject. And so in the end, what is it that would make me different from you? So if you just understand that within the room, what would make my consciousness different from your consciousness? What would make the conscious being that I am different from the conscious being that you are? Anything that you might bring up is something that's objectifiable, and so it's not you. Even if you brought up space, you say, well, space makes my consciousness different from you. The space is objectifiable. You know, it requires a vritti. It's something known. And so now the thing is, if that is understood, then this conscious being, which has got to be, can't be different, the conscious being that I am can't be different from the conscious being that you are, because there's nothing to separate me, because we will all say that that conscious being that I am is non-objectifiable. Then how, in what way can I make that conscious being limited? What would limit it to be able to divide it? Because everything that exists within duality itself is objectifiable. And so it can't be divided or limited. If I can't be divided or limited, then I'm limitless. See what I mean? Limitless is Brahman. So in order for me to be limited, I have to exist within, as an object within duality. Anything within duality is fine. It is limited. It's limited by time. It's limited by space. It's limited by quality. One thing is different from the other. So it's actually the whole Maya Upadhi is an infinite display of limitation. Infinite display of infinitely divisible. Infinitely changing, infinitely coming and going, infinitely unique. Mm. Every one part different from another. You know? So within creation, that's true. So if you are an object, if your being is an object in creation, then you are limited. That is true. This body is limited. Sense organs are limited. Vrittis are limited. Emotions are limited. Yeah, subject to time, subject to death, subject to continual birth and death, and limited by space and quality, and limited in all ways. Not Paramaha. Paramaha means it is free of limitation. In fact, Swamiji will say this statement all the time. Desha Kala Vastu Parichedaha. Parichedaha means limited. Everything within duality is paricheda. It's limited by desha, space, kala, time, and vastu, quality. Or I'd say like this table is different than this desk. Yeah. So one thing is differentiated by quality from another thing. So within dvaita, within duality, desha, kala, vastu, paricheda. Brahman is desha, kala, vastu, aparichedaha. The self is desha kala vastu aparichedaha. It is not limited by space, by time, or by quality. There's only one thing that is that, and that is Brahman. The subject that can't be touched in any way, really, by anything that's objectifiable. So that means that Brahman, your self, consciousness, the ultimate subject, is free of space. It's free of time. It's free of quality that can be differentiated. One quality is different from this quality. We would say that Brahman is the very being of this quality and this quality, right? Or Brahman is the very presence of time, you know? Brahman is the being in which all space takes place. But itself is not divided by space or divided by time or divided by quality. So for how Ramana will, in his whole teaching methodology, he will say like this: in order for you to know this Ishwara Drishti, vision of Ishwara, there is no other way to really know, for you to know Ishwara, right? To have the vision of Ishwara, that anya means other. There's no other way. Na anya, he says. There's no other way other than this samyojana. The samyojana means where the buddhi, having turned the other way, you know, recognizes that that conscious being that I am, right, is not limited by jivatvam. It has no limitation. If it has no limitation, it is Ishwara. So now, this is the thing. To really understand Ishwara and Vedanta, what you have to be able to say is, you have to be able to say both and understand both. You can say, I am Brahman. That's the Mahavakya. I aham Brahmasmi. I am Brahman. Okay, but that's not enough. It is enough, but you have to understand what it means. If you say, I am Brahman, what that means is that this I, when I say I am, the words I am are pointing at the conscious being, me, which is limitless. Brahman means the conscious being that I am is limitless. And so if you say, I am Brahman, then, and you know what that means, then those words land on your being with a recognition of your being as being limitless. Okay? Now, you have to also equally be able to say, I am Ishwara. If you can say, I am Brahman, and you can't say, I am Ishwara, then there's dvaita. Because to say I am, so let's look, if I say I am Ishvara, what does it mean? Think of it like this. You as a jiva, you have an imagination of the meadow. You have an imagination of a meadow with people in it, with trees and with sun and with clouds, and you have a beautiful imagination of a meadow. If I were to ask you, so here you are, you know, you are just you, conscious being that you are, having imagination. You have the mayupadi, you have imagination of the meadow. Who are you? If I were to ask you, here you have an imagination of the meadow, you know, I were to ask you, who are you? Are you the imagination of the meadow, or are you the conscious being? And you would say, well, no, I'm the conscious being with this mayupadi that can have an imagination of the meadow. Mm-hmm. You know? That's Ramana's standpoint. Mm-hmm. Ishvara is not the whole universe. He is Brahman, right? Brahman with the mayupadi, Brahman, because there is a mayupadi. This, the mayupadi expresses as this infinite universe. Mm-hmm. But now if you were to ask Ishvara, you know, who are you? Ishvara is not going to say, I'm this infinite universe. He's going to say, I'm Brahman, who expresses as this infinite universe. Do you see the difference? Mm-hmm. But Ishvara could also say, yeah, I am all of this. That's also true. But to understand that if he says, I am all of this, he would also say, I am all of this and I am free of all of this. Right? To say, I am free of all of this is to, and that is the Asanga Atma. I am all of this, I am free of all of this. That's Satya Mitya. When I say, I am all of this, means all of this Maya, you know, has no self, no being, no reality other than me. I am its truth. I am its Sat, I am its Chit. I am the very being, I am the clay of the pot, I am the very being of this whole thing. So I'm all of this, and I am completely free of all of this. So now, the one who is all of this, and who is completely free of all of this, is Brahman. Right? I am Brahman. The conscious being that I am is Brahman. This Maya Upadi, this Upadi, body, mind, sense organs, is what then? I, the conscious being, am Brahman. Then what is this body, mind, sense organs? How do I bring this I together with the I of Ishvara? That's what he means by the samyojana, the bringing together this I that I am with the I which is Ishvara. When you do the viveka, drik drisha viveka, this body is given over to the maya upadi. This body, mind, sense organs belongs to the whole. Mm-hmm. Sense organs belong to the whole. Thoughts, mind belongs to the whole. Because you're giving it back, really. The ahankara belongs to the whole. All experiences belong to the whole. To the whole maya upadi. And who am I? Really, from the standpoint of me, the conscious being, I am the self from whom the whole maya upadi comes. But from this body, mind, sense organs position, I am part of Ishvara. So as long as I'm identified with the body, mind, sense organs, then this is a part of the whole. And looking at all of this, I'm looking at Ishvara from within Ishvara. As a jiva within Ishvara, with my mind and sense organs, I am looking, walking through Ishvara. But from the standpoint of, if I was to say, who am I? You know, well, really, I mean, in fact, who am I really? I am this I, is the conscious being, which is the self of this body, mind, sense organs, and is also the very self of the whole. And so from that standpoint, this body belongs to Ishvara. The sense organs belong to Ishvara. The mind belongs to Ishvara. The moods, the emotions, the reactions all exist within the laws of Ishvara. They all belong to Ishvara. Do they belong to me, the conscious being? They don't belong to me at all. Because I'm a Sangha. It's not like all of these things are taking place in me, but you'd have to say, no, they don't belong to me. The emotions belong to the mind, you know. The sense organs are stuck in the body, or they belong to the sukshma sharira. All of these things belong to the upadhi, and the upadhis are part and parcel of Ishvara. Mm. But for me, they don't belong to me, I am their being. Right? So all of these have me for themselves, but I myself am free from all of them. And so it's that's the recognition that has to take place for me to recognize Ishvara. Other than the previous verse, he says, otherwise you have some mental imagination of who Ishvara is. You're thinking of Ishvara in terms of Namarupa and in terms of the Upadhi. You know, but you wouldn't think of yourself in those terms. It's very useful to think of a dream or think of the meadow in some sort of any imagination you have or any vritti or even thought that you have. You don't think of yourself in terms of the imagination. You think of yourself in terms of your being that has the capacity to have an imagination. Ishvara is that. The conscious being with the capacity to have an infinite imagination, of which these body, mind, sense organs are all a part. The identity comes from the recognition that who you are is the self that Brahman is. And so to recognize that, the buddhi has to, in a sense, turn around. It means recognize its own substance rather than focus on the contents. You know, the contents, the objectifiable contents that it may be gaining through perception or imagination or memory or any of these things. Usually we're focused on that instead of being focused on the very being that allows those things to be lit up. So here, just to reread this verse, the Paramaha, the self, which is infinite, Brahman, Paramaha Ishvara, having given its prakasha, its consciousness, its light, to the buddhi, Guptaha Pravibhati shines there hidden inside of that buddhi. Swayam, it itself is shining there, but hidden, unknown, right? Inside of that buddhi. Then what has to happen? Then that the buddhi itself has to turn around, turning that buddhi around. There inside of the buddhi is the Ishvara drishti. You see the Ishvara drishti, having turned the mind to look inside of its own being. That is the vision of Ishvara, because Brahman is consciousness. So Ramana is always taking you back to consciousness as Ishvara, because that's in fact the truth. It's just you also have to recognize that this whole Maya Upadhi, you know, is Ishvara's Upadhi.
Does he say that?
I'm saying that. I don't know if he says it exactly like that, but that's how it's usually said traditionally. You ever see it?
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what it is. That's what he's talking about here, so.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.